Hey, everybody. Since today we're talking about Star Wars Rogue One, my favorite Star Wars movie, I thought we'd bring in two of my good friends who are also big Star Wars fans, Kim and Aaliyah.
Hey, it's Aaliyah.
Hey, this is Kim.
How's it going, guys? And how much do you just absolutely love a Star Wars Rogue One?
I enjoyed it.
I haven't seen it. I haven't seen any of the Star Wars.
What?
I didn't know that's why you were bringing me on. I thought it was just...
Yeah, in the text I said Star Wars Rogue One and you wrote back, love it.
Yeah, yeah, I love the idea of doing a podcast.
Yeah, and this, we're doing the podcast, right?
No, you guys are not on the show. You're just... I just thought we'd get people psyched up in the intro for the movie.
We drove an hour and a half to be here.
I know. I'm sorry about that, but I thought I was clear in the text.
I thought we'd get an hour of airtime.
Mm-hmm.
No, this is going to be like a minute, maybe tops. Bad science. Did the movie get it right? Bad science. Or will we have to fight? Hi, everybody. Welcome to Bad Science. I'm Ethan Edinburgh, and today I am super excited. We have two unbelievable guests talking about a Star Wars movie called Rogue One, which made over $1 billion, so I'm sure all of you saw it. Okay, first of all, we have a mission manager at SpaceX. He is the 2013 winner of the television series Canada's Greatest Know-It-All and author of the new book Beyond the Known, A History of Exploration from the Beginning of Humanity to Our Spacefaring Future. It's Dr. Andrew Rader.
Hey, welcome. Happy to be here.
Happy to have you.
I kind of stumbled there. That's normally nice. I run a podcast, so I say welcome to the show.
I mean, thank you for welcoming me. I'm happy to be here with you. And I have many questions for you. But before I get to that, we have an actor-improviser who played Brandon Badger Mayhew in the best show of all time, Breaking Bad, and of course, the new movie El Camino. And he has had roles in essentially all of my favorite shows, such as The Office, Reno 911, Key and Peele, and many more. So I'm delighted to have him here. It's Matt Jones.
Thanks
for being here, Matt.
Nice to be here.
And I'm
also on a new show on CBS, Bob Hart's Apicella.
Absolutely.
I have to,
which everyone...
Right? We all have to hawk her.
Of course.
Shit.
Yep. No, please, hawk the shit. Which was the first name for this podcast.
Yeah, great.
Hawk the shit. I have questions for both of you that have nothing to do with Rogue One, because I am a little bit of a geek fan here.
Great.
So first of all, Faculty 4, Matt.
Oh my God.
Can you tell me about that?
How do you know about that?
How do I know about that?
I was in a bad pop punk band in the early 2000s around the LA scene. You won't be able to find the music online because I've scrubbed it from existence.
But maybe because we're pals now, you'll send it to me personally.
No, I mean, I can play if I'm drunk enough and you're at my house, I might play you something, but it's pretty bad.
You call it pop punk, but I also read there were some ska
there was
in there.
A little bit of ska influence, sure.
Okay, yeah, wanted to make sure. And you played rhythm guitar and sang in this band.
Yes, I did. I screamed in the band.
Okay, that perfectly segues me to my next question for you, which is that I read that your voice, you lost, or I don't know if lost is the right word, but like damaged, doing Boom Chicago in Amsterdam.
Yeah.
And that ever since then, it's been the way that we all recognize it now.
I toured Europe for 3 years. I did 1,000 shows in 20 countries in 3 years, and I lost my voice over and over and over again until it just stuck this way. And now I never stop working. So it's the best thing that's ever happened to me.
Okay. So that's your advice to people is scream a bunch in a band and then do as many shows as possible until your voice.
Are like, oh, it must be cigarettes. It's not. It's literally overuse.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. Well, I love the voice. I'm sure
Thank you
get
so
it
much.
All the time.
Yeah.
That paid off, I think. Okay. So moving back here to Dr. Andrew, I don't know if you prefer to be called that. I can change that up. Dr. Rader. I can just call you Doc.
Just call me Andrew. But okay, you can call me whatever you want. I'll respond to anything.
Doc.
Surely.
No, Andrew, you work at SpaceX, and I'm not going to dig too deep on that. I know I can get all of us arrested in here for doing that. But I did want to ask you just about like what's new over there. And I wanted to ask about those rockets that fly back to the platform, because I really did not understand how that was happening. I watched the launch. Usually the rockets just become waste, right? The normal NASA launches. But you guys developed a system, I say you guys, I don't know if you were involved in that specifically, where the rockets somehow fly back to the launch pad and can be reused. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's the whole goal, is to reuse rockets for the first time in history. And I think that's the key breakthrough that will open up space, because it will make getting to space a lot cheaper. It's like if you took an airplane flight and all the passengers parachuted out of the airplane and then you crashed the airplane into the mountains every time, you'd have to buy a new airplane every flight and it would be really expensive. So the whole goal is to make space ships reusable, thereby reducing the cost of access to space.
Wow. Awesome. That's unbelievable and very cool. And then, of course, I had to ask because I could not find this show on the internet. The Greatest Know-It-All show. Is that like a Jeopardy style thing or there? I saw like pictures with like huge props. So I just wanted to, I don't know. What was that like?
It was like competitive Mythbusters.
Oh,
so you build things, you build a giant cannon, you shoot watermelons out of the cannon, you skydive out of planes and unscramble letters,
whoa,
you go scuba diving and defuse bombs underwater. It's kind of like really active, actually, running through the woods. And
wow.
Yeah.
Name is a little deceiving.
Yeah, there was very little trivia. There was a little bit. There was some Jeopardy style trivia. Actually, my favorite one was, I'm kind of a geography nerd, so
cool.
You had to put together a giant world map in an hour, and I did like intricate details of the Japanese islands and stuff like that.
I'm marrying a Canadian, I learn about a lot of Canadian eccentricities, and one of my new favorites is my fiance was telling me she has this big wooden trunk in our room, and she goes, oh yeah, it's my tickle trunk. And I was like, what is a tickle trunk?
Yeah.
And she goes, you know,
Mr. Dress Up.
And I was like, what are you talking about? So apparently there is this like Mr. Rogers-esque guy named Mr. Dress Up.
Okay.
And he would dress up in things and like have like his public access basically style show. And then the place where he got all his clothes out of was called his tickle trunk. And we watched an episode on YouTube. It's creepy as hell.
Yeah, it sounds like it so far.
It's really weird, but it's so Canadian.
And they have Pokeroo.
Yeah.
Pokeroo is this big, I don't know, almost like a dinosaur or something that comes only at a certain time. They're looking around for him. They're waiting for him. At the appointed time, Pokeroo shows up and just, I think all he says is Pokeroo, Pokeroo. And I had these recurring nightmares about Pokeroo because I thought Pokeroo was coming to kill me.
Yeah.
So like he shows up at a certain time. So I kind of thought that if I didn't fall asleep by a certain time, Pokeroo would come into my bedroom and murder me.
Yeah. Wow. So scary. Was this in the same show?
Same show. Mr. Dress Up
with sick Mr. Dress Up and Pokeroo next to the tickle trunk is the weirdest.
Man, we are missing out our culture.
I need
to get some more Canadian.
Where in Canada are you from?
Ottawa.
Oh, of course.
Perfect. Okay, so we're here to talk about Rogue One, of course. So we were talking very briefly before we started recording, and both of you seem to agree that this was your favorite Star Wars movie.
Yeah, it's my favorite.
I think definitely, It's really interesting time period going to the crawl of the first Star Wars movie, and the characters were really great. And, you know, it had everything that's great about a Star Wars movie, all the cinematics and visuals, and an excellent story, and new characters that we hardly knew. So, that's great.
It literally fixed a really stupid plot point in the original Star Wars.
Okay.
It fixed it.
Which plot point?
That they could just shoot a missile into an air vent and blow up the entire Death Star. That was so dumb.
So true.
But then you're like, wait, the engineer was doing it on purpose. Yeah. That's genius.
Yes.
Totally. So,
great call.
Very, very satisfying.
Yes. I watched this last night and had a great time. Love the movie. I thought it was fantastic. I had a few fun facts about the film, like weird things. So the director, Gareth Edwards, said that he came up with the planet named Scarif after ordering a coffee at Starbucks and the barista misspelled his name. Instead of Gareth, they put Scarif. And I've had friends tell me, I've had friends tell me that they think people do that at Starbucks on purpose to like gain more publicity because people will post pictures of their names being wrong.
Yeah. That's smart. My fiance is Kristen and she has a series of photos on her phone. They never get it right.
Yeah.
Ever.
Yeah.
Kristen, Crystal. Crystal, Christith, like the most insane thing.
Like, doesn't that make you think like they got to be doing this on purpose? Like part of their training must tell them. Because why? With such easy names, do they butcher it?
You're friends with a lot of conspiracy theorists.
I'm not, but I like entertaining them online.
Yeah, that's fantastic.
Anyways, I thought that was kind of funny. And then I was watching an interview with Bill Nye, who was at some sort of premiere party for Rogue One, or I don't know, a screening of some sort. And he was saying that scientifically, there is no force, which made the audience kind of like boo and whatnot. And obviously we know there's not an actual force, but I was going to just throw that question to you guys as far as do you believe in God or fate or some sort of like energy that connects everything?
Me personally, no. However, in terms of fate, I actually think there's a reasonable reason to believe in fate because, however, it's unpredictable. It's like the Heisenberg uncertainty principle. You can't know it, but it may exist. Meaning, I kind of think there's a strong argument that the initial conditions of the universe determine everything that comes after.
Yeah.
So everything is predetermined, but it's not possible to measure it or know it in advance. Therefore, we must act as if it's not.
Yeah. Like, you know, George Carlin's big electron in the sky. Have you ever heard of this?
Yes. Yes.
Like there's no God. There's nothing. There's just an energy that we all kind of abide by, right? Like a scientific rule in its own way. What he calls the big electron. Yeah. And I guess I believe in that, but here, let me connect fate to Star Wars Rogue One and to Bill Nye. This is how I believe in fate. I was at some weird party probably about 3 years ago. And it was one of those parties where you like, I don't know, it's an LA thing. You get to go to like this party and you're there and you're like, oh my God, there's like all these famous people here. Why am I at this party? Great. Bill Nye was there. And me and my friend Simon Helberg were talking and Bill Nye was right there. I was like, we got to go talk to Bill Nye. And he's like, oh no, I know him. He's like been on Big Bang. Come on, let's go talk to him. We go and we're talking to him and he's really nice. He's really cool. Just kind of shooting the shit, having a drink with Bill Nye and a Victoria's Secret supermodel, like two of them together, walk over to Bill Nye. And he's the sweetest guy. And they were just, you know, very attractive. And he acted like a comedic version of an 80s nerd, like could not speak, like, this is so nice to me. And they loved him because they loved Bill Nye.
Right.
But he was like tripping over himself with how upset and like how nerdy he was. It was fantastic.
Yeah.
I was like, it was so great to watch.
Wow.
You're like, you know, Bill Nye, but you're still you're a dork.
Yep.
You're a huge dork. A
professional dork.
Yeah. It's really, really, it was really wonderful to see. And then 5 minutes later, I cornered Mads Mikkelsen because he was there he's from Rogue One.
Oh.
He's the dad who built the Death Star, I guess.
Galen Erso.
Yeah, Galen Erso. Thank you.
Oh, yeah.
I know Mads from I love Danish cinema, and he's like a really great Danish actor. So I cornered him for a while. I do that if I'm drinking and I'm a fan. I'll corner you. But that's it. They're at the same party.
Awesome. Isn't that weird? That is pretty crazy. And I feel like you got the ideal Bill Nye meeting, you know?
But that's fate. Guys.
Oh, yeah.
That's fate. or coincidence.
Yeah, and you're like, yeah, maybe. I wanted to ask you guys how you felt about the ending. I really loved, like, that's what stuck out to me. I remember the first time I saw the movie in theaters, that it really did not feel like the traditional Star Wars ending because all of our main characters perished. You know,
yeah,
everybody was
killed. Died. Yeah, that's great.
That they died.
That was awesome,
it's
right?
Great that they all died. Yeah,
because they're like, oh, no, great. I don't have to see eight more of these. Like, they all died.
Yeah. But and it rolled so well just into the first Star Wars movie or the fourth, A New Hope.
Right.
Rolled so well into it. It's great. And it also didn't have a crawl at the beginning. It's one of the only Star Wars movies without a crawl.
That's right.
So it's very different.
Are they going to, at some point, do you guys think they're going to scrub 1 through 3? And they kind of just redo them?
Oh,
I don't think so. They're probably just going to move on.
They're really, really bad.
Yeah.
I remember them being bad. And then I have a 4-year-old.
Yeah.
And he wanted to watch. I don't know. One of them was on cable and we started watching it. And it was like, this is really bad.
Yeah. It doesn't hold up as much as it should. I will give you that for sure.
It doesn't hold up at all. It didn't hold up when it came out. And now it's like, oh boy.
Yeah. I think there's a lot of people that at least I've spoken with, because we've done a couple of them on the show, maybe all of them, I'm not even sure. And they just feel like I can't get into the old Star Wars anymore. Like I know it's been a huge part of cinema, but like doesn't maybe the pacing of it or something like that, or the effects don't hold up. I'm not sure exactly what it is.
Well, I don't mean the original.
4, 5, and 6, I think hold up.
Oh, you're talking about.
No, I'm talking about.
Oh, yeah.
The original is a little boring. I'm talking about the 1, 2, and 3,
the
which
pod
is
racing and the.
The Jacob, poor kid, Jake Lloyd of it all. But
and what was his name that everybody hated?
Hayden Christensen.
Everybody hated him also. But I was talking about the like CGI comic relief,
Jar Jar Binks.
Yeah, really gets thrown under the bus a lot.
That, like the original, it's 70s, 80s. It's a bit slow, but it's the original. It's great.
Yeah.
I'm talking about the ones that are unwatchable.
Yeah, that's like, yeah, known to be the crap sense. Era of Star Wars, right? I mean, I don't want to be offensive here, but I feel like if you're judging all the films, those get the most.
I would have.
What did your son think? Because my understanding is that kids actually kind of like him.
Oh, thinks it's great.
Yeah. Okay. Right. So like, I think that it fills a purpose then, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
One of his favorite movies is right now Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull.
Pretty cool. People hated that, but I kind of liked it. I thought it was fine.
Watch it again. Because if you go, how do you go from Last Crusade to that?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, it's tough.
Yeah, that was a leap. Another rough
a
moment.
Leap of faith.
What's that guy's name? He has a funny video. The main guy.
LaBeouf.
Shia LaBeouf.
Yeah. I mean, probably not his fault, but yeah, that was rough. To comment on what you said, though, I do feel like they're going so ham on everything Star Wars. Like, they will probably remake either those movies or the original ones, the old ones at some point, because why not do that? Everybody would watch it.
Yeah, it's true. So, if there's a place to make money.
Yeah. Maybe eventually, yeah.
I'll be in it.
Oh, there you go. So we already, the casting has begun.
Oh, boy.
I will say there was one moment in, well, I guess there was like a few. The CGI facial stuff they did in this movie, you know what I'm talking about? With like the general and then with Princess Leia at the end.
Yeah.
Wanted to ask how you guys felt about that, because I was a little bit bothered by it.
It wasn't perfect.
It took me out, but I thought it was good.
So I mean, bad. I thought it was better than the alternative of just casting. Well, I mean, I guess it could have just casted a different actor and say, live with it, right?
I was thinking even like a hologram of that person, or like something where we could
total
like
CGI,
like get away with it a little more. I don't know. When I saw a few, like the first time it happened with the general, I was like, whoa, what the hell is going on here? Why is aliens?
Moff Tarkin,
like that seemed
weird. You know
what's
funny? You can actually hear, because they use James Earl Jones again,
right,
as Darth Vader's voice. You can actually hear that he's much, much older.
Mm. Oh, wow.
Like, I didn't
even
notice. You can hear he's like, you know
gravelly,
what I mean?
More gravelly?
Yeah. Like Darth Vader sounds like an 80-year-old man.
Whoa.
But it still works.
Yeah. But I thought those Vader scenes were so sick, by the way, to compliment the film. Yeah. How awesome was that?
That was really great.
Besides where he does the choke joke.
That
I was not a huge fan of, where he says, like, what is it? Don't choke
on your aspirations.
I mean, I don't know.
They love a metaphor.
And then the other moment was when Bodhi, the pilot, says the name of the film. I thought that was also
Rogue. Two.
It was just like so on the nose, and they really dragged it out like Matt just did. So I don't know.
Really?
That moment was like, oh man, seriously, we don't need. I don't think we
See,
need.
But
that.
I think that might be the Disney of it all, where they're like, come on, just give me a couple lean-ins, lean-ins
for the kids. Say Rogue One.
All movies peak when you're 13 years old, I think. So it's for
you think so?
13 year olds. Ooh. Yeah, yeah. Mm. I mean, not serious adult films, but adult films. Well, actually, they peak when you're 13 as well.
Yeah, interesting.
I'll tell you this, as a person who has gone to Comic-Con many, many times, it's people in their 50s dressed like Simpsons characters and stuff like that.
Right.
It's everywhere.
Yeah.
There is a million adults. Okay, maybe 990,000 adults, but you know what I mean? 10,000 kids, but there is a million adults that love this stuff so much.
Yeah, yeah.
And you're like, it's an adult film.
Yeah, so maybe there was a bunch of 50-year-olds in the theater cheering when he said,
Rogue... Rogue One.
It warmed my heart a little bit.
Okay, there you go. So it worked. Maybe I don't know what I'm talking about. No one would be surprised about that. Okay, so the main threat here is this weapon that can destroy planets. Although we didn't see it destroy a planet in this film.
We saw it destroy like a city.
Section of a planet, yeah.
Yeah, it's getting there, supposedly.
Mm-hmm.
And so if we had something like that, what do you think could power it, or do we have anything to you that's like, oh, this is the most dangerous, powerful weapon that we have?
Well, they're saying it's based off those crystals, right?
So the power is not based off those crystals. It's kind of like, but it channels it or something like that.
Right.
It's kind of like a lightsaber, but it's kind of like a warp drive in Star Trek, which are powered by antimatter. That's where the energy comes from.
Right.
But they somehow channel the energy from the antimatter through dilithium crystals to create a warp field, right?
Right.
So it's kind of like just the channeling or the...
like shooting light through a prism?
Yeah, exactly. Like shooting light through a prism. So that's the whole idea with the super laser, which, you know, so the super laser too would have to be powered by an energy source that we wouldn't understand. So they use, apparently in Star Wars, just like Star Trek uses antimatter, which does exist, mm-hmm. but currently we can't really manipulate. They use something called hypermatter, which somehow theoretically takes like black or dark matter or something from like another dimension. And that's how they Whoa. Both travel through hyperspace, which is supposed to be another dimension. Right. In string theory, there's between 10 and 16, or depends who you ask, other dimensions. And so with hyperdrive, they travel through other dimensions. And this somehow like draws matter from other, or energy from another dimension. So clearly just completely made up, but it is tied loosely to actual principles of physics. And that's what supposedly powers these things, both the Death Star and even Star Destroyers and hyperdrives actually somehow pulls energy from another dimension.
Okay, so because I'd never heard of that. I didn't know that in Star Wars they're pulling energy from another dimension.
Yeah, I was looking at Wikipedia. This is how they explain it. Because there's no like way to explain it with our current understanding of physics, except to kind of loosely tie it to concepts. This is what science fiction does a lot, is we don't know how to build a Death Star. Exactly. Actually, we could build a Death Star, except for a few things. Gravity generation. We can't generate gravity in space. It would have to be spinning or something like that. But shape is not really right for that. And the other thing is the power source. I mean, we could power it with like nuclear reactors. And actually, it would turn on the lights. but they couldn't go through hyperspace. See the main thing is like the Death Star is a battle station that actually goes through hyperspace. So it travels much faster than light.
Right.
Travels around the galaxy.
They mentioned that even though we don't see it, right?
Yeah. Well, we see it in A New Hope. I mean, you don't see, but they say prepare to hyperspace, but they also jump from like star system to star system, right?
So here's a science question. So the thing that we always hear about, like cold fusion, like they're so close to figuring it out. And once we figure that out, then we can power the whole planet and all of our energy concerns are solved, right?
Well, this is mainly fusion. Cold fusion is like a separate thing that you can do at a lower temperature, but the real kind of eureka breakthrough would be just fusion power in general. That's energy positive. Yeah.
Okay. So let's say we have fusion power. So are we saying that like this power is maybe like once we have fusion power, then splitting it again and again and again? You know what I mean?
So it would be
like amplifying.
It would be thousands of times. So basically it goes like chemical bonds are like one amount of energy, and then you go to nuclear fission is like 1,000 times more powerful, and then nuclear fusion is 1,000 times more powerful than that, and then antimatter is 1,000 times more powerful than that,
right.
And then this hypermatter is, I guess, like 1,000 times more powerful than antimatter, right. Or something like that.
Got it.
Using dark energy. So right, and supposedly the Death Star, they say like firing on one reactor or whatever. So some people have actually done calculations of how much energy it would take, and it's about the energy of like four suns, like the energy output of like four suns, because to rip a planet apart is kind of ridiculous. And a laser probably wouldn't even do it, because a laser would just probably put a hole right through the planet.
Right. Okay. Right?
And you get like serious volcano. It would be a bad day.
Sure.
but you wouldn't probably blow up the planet. So you actually don't see that in this movie. You see that in A New Hope. What they do in this movie is probably realistic, which is like shooting a hole into the planet, which causes like a massive volcano or shockwave.
Yeah, that huge wave of land.
Exactly. Yeah. So I think actually in this movie, it's portrayed much more realistically than just completely blowing up a planet.
Wow.
Interesting.
All right. We're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back.
Hey, everyone. This is Jesse David Fox, host of Good One, a podcast about jokes. I am proud to announce that I have personally won the Streaming Wars. And there's a new docu-special on Peacock based on our own Vulture podcast. Good One, a show about jokes, follows Mike Birbiglia as he develops new material, taking audiences through the process of transforming personal stories into stand-up. Featuring interviews with Mike's family and comedy colleagues like Seth Meyers, Hasan Minhaj, and Asko Akatsuka, Good One, a show about jokes, is streaming now only on Peacock.
The break is over. Here we go, back to the show about science.
Okay, so first of all, the dimension thing blows my mind, because then it opens up like, are we going to see new dimensions of the same storylines in Star Wars stuff? Like, what's the deal there?
So yeah, like when you say other dimensions, I wouldn't think of it like physical matter, because the three dimensions that we see is like tangible reality to us, and our senses are all calibrated to work within those dimensions. We see visible light, and we smell like smells, little particles of matter, and we hear sound waves, right? They're all calibrated to that. So you're not going to be able to experience other dimensions in any meaningful way.
Okay. That sucks.
And I don't know how much you know about Star Trek, but they've already played with interdimensional travel and different time periods and stuff.
Right.
Like different Kirks and different. I used to be into the Next Generation when I was a kid. Mm-hmm. So I know the difference between NC-1701B and D.
Yeah, yeah. He is Excelsior class.
Yeah.
C's Ambassador class.
And C was blown up, but then they came back and there is already time travel in the Star Trek universe.
Okay. So if Star Wars did it, it would be
okay,
but it would be kind of copying what.
See, the thing I don't understand about Star Wars, I was realizing this when I was watching this movie, is like, so they can fly onto a planet, take off on a dime,
easy, you know,
just all that stuff.
Yeah.
But they don't have the internet. Like there's no like we have to store our data in a tower.
And there's like memory cards.
Oh man, I couldn't wait to get to that.
It's basically a hard drive. Yeah.
I thought that was insane. I thought that was so funny.
And it's 1980s blip dot computer screens and stuff like that. It's all kitschy. It's nice. It's cool. It makes a good effect. But also the ships look like shit, right? Like they look like old clunkers, right? They look like they're falling apart. And there's like air gaps and stuff like that. It looks like you would definitely die flying on one of the ships.
Yeah,
it's still like a window. It looks like a Winnebago in space.
I don't know what his name was, but that like alien creature who's part of the Rebels has that chair that's like just sitting in front of the window itself. And it just looks so dangerous every time I see it.
Exactly.
Just like,
that's another thing. You would never build a bridge. Well, this is true with Star Trek as well. But it's okay. In Star Trek, they have a view screen. It's not a window. There are no windows, and there shouldn't be any windows.
Right. Yeah.
Well, some people say transparent aluminum in the older version or something like that. But anyway, there should not be windows, and your bridge would be like right at the center of the ship. Mm-hmm. You'd never put like the most important part of the ship right at a little bubble exposed. Hey, target here, shoot here.
It seems so ridiculous. Like, what use is it? Why was it good or beneficial to be right out in the open looking out at space?
Yeah. I just want a good view. The heck am I on a spaceship for?
Captain,
anyway?
You can't see what's to the side or behind you or below you or above you.
Give me some suicide doors.
It's just ridiculous. And actually, in The Last Jedi, they even like blow up the view screen and they all fly into space or whatever.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my God. Yeah, completely another ridiculous scene. But okay.
Oh, yeah, that was.
She has to like fly through space and she's able to somehow.
Yeah, she wakes up and you're like,
that no
was a
need.
Bridge too far for me.
Yeah. Speaking of the bridge.
With Leia.
If you acknowledge the Force, I think that's possible, though. Like, you can survive for a few minutes in space.
You think so?
Oh, yeah. Huh. That actually is.
Is it?
Yeah. That's possible. Yeah. I didn't have a problem with that at all.
So if you. Okay. If I was to step outside of a spaceship.
Yeah.
And.
No Force.
No Force. Nothing.
Yeah.
How quickly would my body freeze?
It would take quite a long time for it to freeze. And it depends entirely on where the sun is relative to you. So the thing about heat transfer is the air usually takes away your heat, right? So if you're in space is a vacuum, which is an excellent insulator.
Right.
So you wouldn't lose heat that quick. You start radiating to everything, to deep space, and you start losing heat on one side. But if you're facing the sun, you start gaining heat on the other side.
Right.
Spaceships often overheat more than cool down too much. Because space is cold, but it's not the right way to think about it. Space is nothing is the right way to think about it, meaning there's nothing to take the heat away.
An absence of
anything that takes the heat away.
Yeah. Like tanning, if you just turn every night. Now and then.
Right. That's called a barbecue roll. And it's what we actually do with spaceships and rockets and stuff is just spin them at a slow rate to keep the heating even. Yeah. Totally.
Interesting.
But how quickly would he die?
I mean, basically, so you don't try to hold your breath or you could damage your lungs, but your lung, it's going to suck all the air out of your lungs and it's going to start, you know, boiling in your blood, but very slowly. It's going to just make air bubbles and stuff like that. You would last a couple of minutes. For sure. Basically, until you, the main thing is you're going to suffocate, right? You know, your lungs are going to evacuate and you're going to suffocate.
So let's say Matt, who I assume is going to be space traveling soon.
Sure, absolutely.
Absolutely. Is outside of the spacecraft for like just a minute or so.
Yeah.
And then we get him back in.
Right.
What's the damage here?
Assuming it's not like an explosive decompression or something like that. His eardrums might burst, that kind of thing. He'd get a bad sunburn potentially if he's in the sun.
Okay.
But you know, he would survive and be able to recover.
Okay. So just
no brain damage?
No, not unless it was long enough to deprive the brain cells of oxygen for a while.
So he just has like a bit of a tan and an ear.
So I just hold my breath, run outside, grab some stuff, come back in.
I mean, you could. Like, that's pretty actually simple. What they showed in 2001 Space Odyssey.
Yeah.
Odyssey, where he docked with the ship and it was decompressed and he just went through space basically for a minute.
There was also like a baby fetus in the sky that was like as big as a planet.
Not saying it's nothing totally real. It's pretty realistic, that movie though. But that's the alien thing.
That's one of my favorite. I've always thought one of my favorite representations of like a space station is the 2001 space station, in the way that he like can walk around the edge and the rim, and there it's not really centered on any like center like gravity. You know what I'm talking about? Like,
totally. Yep. Yeah. That's perfect. The artificial gravity by spinning.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. It's really cool. Yeah. It's really cool.
That's another thing about Star Wars ships. You couldn't ever walk around. I mean, they must have some kind of artificial gravity generator, but Star Trek too. But like, how would that work?
We don't know.
Wouldn't the spaceships be covered in like solar panels of some kind as well?
Well, so they use like panels? These hypermatter reactors. So they have these reactors that are just, you know, thousands, millions of times more powerful than any energy source we have. So they wouldn't need it. They wouldn't bother with something so primitive as a solar panel, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Well, but the TIE fighters, they have solar panels on the wings, right? Which is like ridiculously stupid considering they can't be powered by those. Think about how like a solar panel powers your phone, recharges your phone or something. Right. Imagine trying to recharge a TIE fighter shooting lasers.
Does it just look like solar panels? Or is it like on purpose?
I mean, I think it's legit supposed to be solar panels.
That's really funny.
But it's really, and also TIE means twin ion engine, which means it uses ion engines. And they mentioned
twin ion engine.
Yeah.
My son literally asked me, what does TIE fighter mean the other day?
Yeah. Yeah.
Did not know that.
Twin ion engines, but for deep space travel, they're completely unpowerful. It's basically like blowing on a sheet of paper. So the TIE fighter would go extremely slowly. And unless our ion engines are completely different from our ion engines, which they must be.
Right. Twin ion engines made at Brookstone, because you know everything was like
that's right.
I used to work at Brookstone. I was like 18, and everything was like it's like positive ion. Just such bullshit. Right. What we were talking.
No matter what it was, watch or like, a massage chair.
This is an ion charged hairbrush. You're like, what?
That's why it's $700.
Yeah. It gives you static electricity, then, right? Yeah. If it has extra ions, that is adding to your
I wanted to bring up, speaking of like primitive, I guess solar panels on TIE fighters. This thing that we were laughing about before, which was the hard drive of data that they're grabbing because they're storing the plans for the Death Star on it, which is like a bunch of blueprints, which can't be that much data, right? I mean,
So it's a gigantic station, larger than many cities. Like, I mean, it's like if you're storing every like sewer and fiber optic and what every connection, everything about it, everything about like many. Think about New York City. Probably mapped 50 out. Times over.
But even like a PDF with a million pages is only going to be a gig.
That's what I was going to say. Like, it still can't be more than like a season of a show.
right. So, I mean, one thing is maybe they want it on a big enough drive so they don't lose it.
Sure.
Okay. But this whole issue of data storage on Scarif on a planet is weird if you think about it. However, the argument and justification of it is it's for security, right? Like, the whole shield thing seems to be not to protect the planet from attack, but to prevent people from illegally beaming out information, right? Oh. They have to drop the shield to get the information out, right? So if you want to lock down data, getting your own planet with a shield that prevents people from beaming it out and one extremely well-defended transmitter that could send out that data kind of makes sense.
So it's like a giant, Scarif is like a giant Google server database.
Yes, yeah, exactly. It's like that thing in Utah.
So it's not completely ridiculous. Now, once you beam out that data, it's out in the open and it seems like a huge security breach. You're just beaming it across space. Yeah. So you could just set up a rebel ship in between the data transmission spot and just like peek in on the data, like listen in on what data is coming out of Scarif, right? So it's not fully well thought out. You'd want to like transport it in a vault on a Star Destroyer or something like that, right? Yeah. But actually having physical data is not ridiculous. The other thing is like there's this constant contest with data rates versus storage of how much data can you get from San Francisco to New York City in a day?
Oh, I watched that movie. Did you see that movie that they just did?
No.
Oh God, it was with Alexander Skarsgård and what's his name? Jesse Eisenberg.
Okay.
Yeah, and it was this indie movie about them building this fiber optic line between DC and New York to see who can get data there the fastest.
Cool.
Because that's for the stock market. and that and whoever
it's
can get
the,
whoever can get it the fastest like has a literal $1 billion fiber optic line.
Whoa. Yeah. Yep.
I had no idea about that before that.
And it's almost equal. Like, so if you loaded a bunch of memory cards on an airplane and flew it over from San Francisco to New York, or just tried to transfer it across fiber optic cables across the United States, it's almost equal because the speed at which we get better at transmitting data always like marches in parallel with the rate of being able to store more data.
Okay.
So imagine just loading up an airplane with memory cards versus just transmitting on our best networks.
Right.
And it's about equal. So physical memory is not necessarily slower or more backwards than.
Okay.
Yeah.
I just loved the size of this thing that they were carrying.
Yeah, right.
Which looks so funny.
Yeah. But for security purposes, you'd want something big, right? It's like the key that the gas station gives you for the restroom. People don't walk off with it. In fact, it should be giant. It should be a giant, right.
That's true.
So like a car size thing, so people aren't walking off with it.
I was curious if you knew, like piggybacking off this whole thing, like how much storage now, because, you know, speaking of us being like in bands, we used to, I'm sure you did the same, like put stuff onto a CD and, you know, that's how like everybody was giving each other stuff. I made you a mix, you know, it's like my favorite 14 songs, whatever. And it was like the coolest thing. And then MP3s, it's like, oh, it's a way smaller file. We can fit 10,000 on the phone, you know? And hard drives is the same, right? Now we have these terabyte hard drives, which was something that if you told me 10 years ago, I'd be like, you sound like a crazy person.
Totally.
So what is the latest? Do you know, Matt, like how small can we, because I've seen these tiny, tiny USB drives that fit
I think 500 gigs
or whatever.
Data storage is not even what it's about anymore.
It's not.
It's about streaming, like literally everything, streaming all information. So all storage is, stuff is stored in certain locations and we just have access to stream.
Right. But that's what I'm saying. Like we still have these huge data centers, right? Like there is still a priority to having these hard,
it's so cheap to make new memory that we don't delete old things. It's more expensive to go back and delete things. The amount of computer power it takes to delete things would be worse than just building new memory to store new things.
But you remember the Matrix? When he wakes up and it's just like oceans of of almost looks like computer towers. You know what I'm talking about?
The first Matrix?
They're just all people,
second,
right?
Yeah,
they're,
the second. Yeah, but like there's people, towers, but then they go past these like, I think it's the second
like
one.
Like data farms.
Yeah, data farms.
Oh, yes, yeah.
And I'm like, that's what the world is going to be at some point.
Right, that's like, what I'm inquiring about.
Right,
we have like, these huge centers that's what they're for, right? It's just like huge, I don't know, warehouses where just we store everything. We store every Amazon purchase and every thing that you click, I guess.
Yeah.
So that's really scary. So you have that at SpaceX? You have humongous factories?
They're definitely have data servers, like a normal company, though. Yeah, sure.
I'm just kidding around. Okay, I was going to ask about these kyber crystals. We kind of touched on it as far as like fueling lightsabers and fueling.
I think that's completely made up. I mean, it's like dilithium. It's just something you have that explains why something works. But yeah, so the whole thing about, lightsabers, which work off kyber crystals, also the super laser of the Death Star that works off kyber crystals.
Do they call it a super laser, by the way? Is that?
I don't know if they ever use the term in any. It is called that in like Wikipedia or whatever, and definitely some of the books, maybe. I've read a bunch of the Star Wars books, but but
there
I
were vague
ever,
descriptions throughout the movie of them saying, like, it's a super powerful weapon that can destroy planets,
right?
But I guess the Death Star,
and in particular, like force fields.
Mm-hmm.
None of these would work off pure energy or the way they're stated, but they're all kind of maybe like plasma or something. They would have to be some kind of matter, right?
Yeah.
When plasma is like the fourth state of matter, it's just like deionized. So it's all kind of the electrons are all shared between all the, it's like a gas where the electrons are all shared in a kind of a high energy cloud.
Mm-hmm.
That's the only way anything like this would really work. Like a lightsaber couldn't just be light.
Right. And I was reading also that the issue with the lightsaber is that how do we stop the laser? Because tell me about that, because
That's what has to be plasma contained, so it's not a laser. Right, because you're right, a laser is a beam. Even the blasters aren't lasers, they're just bolts of energy of some sort, or plasma or something like that, maybe even like a super hot projectile that carries with it a lot of energy such that it glows. It just looks like a laser, because it can't be a laser.
And people are still fine, by the way, when they get hit with these blasters.
Yeah,
they get hit with a blaster in the shoulder, they're like,
too, right? Like,
yeah,
it seems like less effective.
But some
than
people they like die. And yeah. then some people it's, are like, ah,
yeah. damn.
And
stormtrooper armor is not yeah. effective.
No.
In protecting them.
It really
the
isn't.
Thing is, it never is, though. It's the same thing with military helmets. The reason why soldiers wear helmets, it doesn't stop bullets.
Yeah.
It's mainly to give them more confidence, yeah. A, and B, to protect them from debris and stuff like yeah. that. So like in Endor or whatever, it would actually protect them from Ewok weapons.
Oh, right? Yeah,
so
sure.
Yeah.
Somehow sticks, they get smoked
rocks.
By, yeah, sticks, rocks, right. and falling debris and stuff yeah. like blast, like explosive.
Oh, man.
Shrapnel and stuff like that.
I mean, we should probably look into like bulletproof helmets at this point. No, I mean, that seems useful. It's your head.
Actually,
I mean,
they have Kevlar, but yeah. that more, they've stopped trying to deflect and more trying to absorb.
Okay.
As far as military style helmets, like it's not, you know what I mean? It's not going to go ding off of it, but it's more going to try to slow it down.
Right.
And less absorb damage. It more. And because
whoa.
So many things are, what is it called? When the
shrapnel.
Rounds, yes, have yeah. like shrapnel style rounds.
Whoa.
Yeah, it's terrifying.
Okay. Don't you ever like wear a helmet when you're biking and then yeah. you're like, oh, I'm invincible. I find it like so much more dangerous to wear a bike helmet because then you think you can take all these risks and stuff yeah. and go crazy.
That's so funny. So you are taking a bold no helmet stance to for kids on bikes.
Nah, I don't know. But
no,
that's
no.
probably wrong. But that's how I feel. When I wear a helmet or something, I feel like I'm invincible and I can take more risks. But
gotcha,
I don't
gotcha.
Know if that's universal. And it probably doesn't work because head injuries are pretty bad.
Yeah. We're getting low on time, but I have so much more to ask about. I wanted to bring up the fact that robots are like working on their own in a lot of these scenes in Star Wars.
Oh, yeah.
And so how do you feel about that? Like these robots that are just, I don't want to say taking our jobs because that feels very political, but you know, yeah, exactly. Like, yeah, doing,
Well, at what point do they become sentient beings? This is something in Star Trek as well with like Data, and he's judged to be, artificial life form, basically. Mm-hmm. Like the robot in Rogue One is clearly sentient.
Yeah, yeah. They're all sentient.
So it's
yeah,
yeah.
That
right,
is the, that
sentient,
is the
right.
thing that ties every Star Wars movie together. Is every one of them has a special sentient robot? Like
right.
in that,
well, they
one,
all have R2-D2 and C-3PO.
What?
I think every single one has R2-D2
yes,
and C-3PO.
Also, the one the new Han Solo
yes.
has that one that has like political aspirations.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Lando Calrissian has the one that's
oh, yeah,
like
yeah,
the lady
yeah,
that
the
he
leader,
loves,
yeah.
but also like is real into women's rights and robots' rights and
mm-hmm.
stuff. You're like, that's
yeah.
very sentient.
Yeah.
Totally.
Yeah.
Too sentient.
Yeah.
And I love I don't remember his name, K something or other in this movie.
Yeah.
In this
oh,
movie.
Yeah, great. It's Alan Tudyk.
So
yeah,
awesome.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
funny.
From Firefly.
It's so great. But yeah, I don't know. Because it kind of started that way. I think within the first like few minutes, you saw like robots working on ships and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, well, obviously it seems efficient, but where's all these engineer guys?
Right.
You know?
But there's no internet to connect all of them together, so there's not going to be an uprising.
Maybe it's like Battlestar Galactica, where they got rid of really advanced computer technology because they didn't want it to take over.
That's a smarter idea.
That sounds pretty cool. Yeah, I wonder if we could do that.
Yeah.
Because think about how sentient the galactic internet of Star Wars would be, and what a threat it would pose to people.
Oh, yeah.
Totally.
Yeah.
And how annoying it would be if everybody's tweeting all the time and like posting on Instagram.
It would turn into something like the Borg.
With like 400 billion planets,
That sounds really super annoying. And exactly where we're headed, very strangely. Okay, holograms. Do you mess with holograms? You ever made a hologram, used a hologram?
Nope.
Okay, very cool.
They seem so unnecessary.
In the movie?
You know, in general.
Oh.
Like, just, why is that different than just watching a video?
Right,
You know what I mean? Like, I never understood holograms.
I think similarly to, like, VR, I don't know a ton about this, but I will say that I've done now some VR that it's, like, totally mind-blowing, super cool, but the VR that I did, like, 5 years ago was like, whatever, why are we doing this?
Yeah.
So I kind of feel like with holograms, the stuff that I've seen now is like, oh, okay, that's kind of cool, I get it. It's, like, kind of a niche thing, maybe, but in 10, 15 years, I would hope that it's the next level of movies or I don't know, entertainment.
Like holograms, like his hologram, Jenna Erso's hologram is way less impressive than just video chat.
Right. Yeah. You're right. The all blue. And I was also thinking about faking them because we can already, you know, deep fake people on the internet.
Yeah.
So it's like, and it seems like a common thing in these Star Wars movies, like the most valuable message is this hologram.
Yeah.
But like, how easy is that to fake? You probably fake that so easy, that blue screen or whatever. That's not so hard.
Yeah.
So I don't know. It's if you guys have seen, like, if that's a concern to you guys moving forward. seeing your friends not actually being them.
Yeah, that's, I mean, it's terrifying. You see that Joe Rogan clip where they like, they change his face and they take pieces of things he said and make him say insane shit. And it's really hard to tell that that's not him. The amount that they can do with that now.
And then the Darth Vader, it seemed like, was being kept in this like goo.
You know what I'm talking about? He's in the Bacta tank.
Right.
Okay, what?
So it's kind of nutrients or something. It's the same thing that Luke Skywalker was in on Hoth at the beginning of Empire Strikes Back.
Oh, okay.
In that tank. It's like some kind of algae or something. They explain it. It's like aloe vera, basically. Imagine being immersed in a tank of aloe vera.
Have you ever had like a mineral bath? Gone to a spa?
Not really.
Yeah, it's similar.
Okay. I got to go to more goo spas. Just because, I thought like, if this is the answer here, that we can just go into these tanks and heal ourselves, we should probably experiment more with these. I've never really seen, in hospitals.
Shouldn't have fixed his face?
Yeah, what's up with his face?
I don't think it really fixes, it definitely doesn't fix scars. I don't think it really does very much. It's like a 10% difference or something. It's like nice and soothing, like aloe vera. Does that really, take away burns? No, it just kind of like
soothes. Oh, so it is like a spa thing.
Yeah,
like spa
treatment. So, yeah.
It's like a dark side spa treatment.
Yeah.
We should open up our own like Airbnb experience.
Yeah, back to tank, yeah.
Yeah,
back to will make you feel evil.
Yeah. Powerful and evil. Okay. So, we end with some plugs. Obviously, your book. People can order the book or go buy the book at a bookstore, I would assume.
Yeah, bookstores, online, Beyond the Known. Yep. On my website, stuff like that.
And you have a podcast as well?
I have a podcast.
Spellbound, I believe. Great. Anywhere people should find you online?
Yeah, just my website, andrewrader.com.
Andrewrader.com. And Sir Matt.
CBS Monday nights at 8:30. Bob Hart's Abishola. I've got some movies coming out soon. What's the one? Turkey Bowl.
Turkey Bowl.
Turkey Bowl. It's a football movie going to come out around Thanksgiving.
Okay.
And more stuff. I don't know. Maybe something with this guy here.
Okay.
And then
we're going to be in the next Star Wars?
Yeah. We're going to be in the next Star Wars. And that's it. I don't know. Matt Jones is dead. That's my handle.
Oh, okay, good. I thought you were making some weird premonition.
No, I mean,
did you die in Breaking Bad? I can't remember.
I did not. Okay. No. As hard as I tried.
You stayed on the drugs for a long time or something. You got when it
overboard. Yeah, I was like, I'm always on drugs in the show. Yeah, basically.
And in real life for research.
Yeah, for research.
Absolutely, of course. Well, seriously, thank you guys both so much for coming. I had a great time, and I'll see you next time when we do the ones that you hate. Which one was it? The pod racing.
Phantom Menace.
Yeah. Fantastic.
Thanks.
All right. Thank you. Bye. Bad Science is hosted and produced by me, Ethan Edinburgh. Our associate producer is Emily Feld. Our editor is Lucas Bollinger. And the executive Padawan Deucer is Brett Kushner. Follow us on Instagram at Bad Science Show. That's at Bad Science Show. Or feel free to send us an email, badscience@seeker.com. That's badscience@seeker.com. Let us know what you think about the show, any movies we should do in the future. I always appreciate getting your emails. And of course, leave us an iTunes review. That lets other people hear about the show. And I'll see you all next week. Bye.